Hello, Mighty Warrior. Can I ask you a question? Do you love your wife? Of course you do. But be honest, do you sometimes struggle living with her? You know what I mean. You're loving each other one moment and then you're arguing the next. Probably with something that she said or you did. And deep down inside, don't you wish your marriage could be easier? Well, it can be, and we want to help you. Backed by popular demand, Real Men Connect is hosting the second Marriage Secrets for Men Bootcamp on Saturday, November the 10th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and you don't want to miss it. You're going to learn simple, proven, practical ways to get along better with your wife, make your marriage easier, avoid unnecessary conflicts and arguments, and even have more sex. And we're guaranteeing the results. But here's the catch. You can't tell your wife what you learn. You can only apply what you learn. This marriage bootcamp is for men only. So get ready to get down, dirty, and real as we help you make your marriage work better. So make sure you register for this event before November the 10th or before we sell out. Now, I say sell out because seating is limited. So to sign up and reserve your spot and take full advantage of the early registration discount, go to MarriageSecretsForMen.com. That's MarriageSecretsForMen.com. I know that no marriage is easy, but yours can be easier, and we can help you guaranteed. So go to MarriageSecretsForMen.com and sign up today.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Fellas, it's that time of the show where we step out of the box and we don't interview men today. We interview a woman. And I'm so excited about this guest that we have. Her name is Meg Wilson. Let me tell you a little bit about Meg. Meg is the author of Hope After Betrayal. And men, listen up. The subtitle of her book is Healing When Sexual Addiction Invades Your Marriage. And she's a regular speaker to women's groups, Bible studies, and conferences. And 18 years ago, Meg began leading Healing Heart groups, which was, I guess, and then in 2013, she founded the Hope After Betrayal Ministries to bring help and hope to women whose husbands are caught in the web of sexual addictions. And hopefully I'll get a chance to ask Meg a little bit about that, those groups, because that sounds like a great group. And Meg says that her mission is to help women find hope and healing from the pain of their partner's sexual betrayal. Now, in addition, she hopes to increase awareness in the church of how to minister to the brokenhearted. Meg and her husband, Dave, have been married for more than 35 years, and they have two adult daughters. They make their home in Vancouver, Washington, and you can learn more about Meg Wilson at her website at hopeafterbetrayal.com. And now, it's been a long time. If you've been a long time listener to the Real Men Connect podcast, or if this is your first time listening to the podcast, you guys know that my porn and sexual addiction caused my first marriage to end of 16 years. And it's also one of the reasons I accepted the call to full-time men's ministry to start Real Men Connect about 3 years ago. Now, we also know that the data shows us that 70% of Christian men admit struggling with pornography, but very rarely do churches talk about it on Sunday mornings, if at all. So I wanted to give survivors like Meg and overcomers like me and experts on this topic a platform to discuss it. So please join me in welcoming my guest, Meg Wilson, to the show. Thanks for joining us, Meg.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dr. Martin. Glad to be here.
All right. And Meg, I'm so excited because in a sense, it's kind of bittersweet because even though God has shown me a lot of grace and mercy, and I'm now in my second marriage, and I would not even have this ministry if it wasn't for what I went through, there's not even a day that goes by that I don't think about what I've done and the damage that I caused to my first wife. And so this is bittersweet because I know this can offer a lot of healing to the men and to help them with their wives. But at the same time, it just stirs up a lot of wounds of memories for me. But I know that we have to process this stuff in order to not repeat the cycle. So, Meg, it is a real blessing to have you on the show. And Meg, we always start our show by asking every guest to give us their favorite Bible verse based on the season that they're in, their life anchor verse. What's yours in this season in your life?
Well, that's easy. That's Romans 12:12, which is be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. There's just it's like a three-pronged stool in terms of not forgetting one of those three parts. Being joyful in hope is hope is not just that, you know, a wish. Biblical hope is believing that which we don't see yet. And then that brings us to the next thing is being patient in affliction, because nobody likes to be in the crucible. Nobody likes the heat of the refining fires, but that's where God does his work. So if we'll be patient, and then through that, what gets us through all of that is prayer, being faithful in prayer.
You know, Meg, I told you even before we came on the show that I have probably have more questions than I can probably get to. So we're going to allow the Holy Spirit to lead us. But you already addressed some of the questions I'm going to ask later on in the show. And we'll probably get back to it anyway. But let's start with a little bit about your story and how you came to start Hope After Betrayal Ministries and eventually write a book on this topic.
Okay, that's a big question. It started... We had been married, my husband Dave and I had been married 17 years. A friend of ours called and told us that he was stepping down as a deacon of his church because of an addiction to pornography. That was the first I had ever heard of that. And I knew this man. He was a good husband and a good father. Now, that was very confusing, but that was also what prompted my husband to, a few weeks later, tell me that he also struggled with pornography addiction. Unfortunately, he did what so many men do, is tell me 90% and leave that 10% out that he thought I wouldn't be able to handle. So that's a huge mistake. Of course, it leaves a foothold. And so we literally moved on. We moved to Washington. We were in California and found a church that had a group for men struggling with sexual addiction, which I thought was amazing. And then in that first disclosure, I was so thankful that he came to me and told me about it. And I think I did what I thought a good Christian wife is supposed to do. I just forgave him and moved on. I'm not sure I really processed it fully. So we now are in a new church in Washington, and he's in a group and he's seeing a counselor. So I approached the pastor and said, hey, why don't you have something for the wives? We need support as well. He wisely sent me to a church 45 minutes away that had a group, which is really amazing, because this was, 17 years ago. So that there, the fact that we lived in a place where there was a group is the hand of God. And so I went to that group with an eye to bring their material to our group. Fast forward, we now are going to start our first group, 10 ladies. I had a co-facilitator, thankfully, who went through the class at the other church with me. And it was the day I was supposed to share my testimony of hope. And unbeknownst to me, my husband had fallen the weekend before. He had been on a business trip, came home for the weekend, had another big business trip, so he's gone. And he called his leader, and his leader's wife was my co-facilitator, and he just said, you've got to come home now. You have got to tell Meg everything before she shares her testimony. So there was a message on the phone that said, I'm coming home early. Make sure that the girls weren't home. They were in high school then. And I just knew in my gut that I was about to experience something devastating. So he walked in with a rolled up journal, and I could see from the look on his face the weight that he was carrying that was about to be put on me. And he went through his timeline, how he found his father's pornography at age 10, and then dabbled through the time when he made his first confession, including the missing information. And then now, because he had left that out, the enemy pulled him deeper and farther. So he had to share at this point that he had gone outside of our marriage. And I was in complete shock. I mean, literally shock. I couldn't feel anything. I remember looking down on my legs and watching them shake and thinking, wow, my legs are shaking. And I knew enough to not make a decision in that moment because I had been through the class and I knew that I needed to hear from God. So, of course, I immediately got on my knees and said, why? Why, God? Why? Try, you know, that's all you can do is just cry out to God when you're in that deep of a emotional pain.
You know, now, Meg, there's a lot that I could jump into there because, you know, I have experience in this, being on the other side, being on Dave's side of the fence. And as far as you mentioned that you guys had been together for 17 years prior to this even coming to light. Was there anything that you noticed in those 17 years? Because I know for the men who are out there listening, and I think I mentioned it even in the beginning of the show, about 70% of men admitted, Christian men have admitted to struggling with porn. And what I did mention is over 55% of pastors. And most women don't know those kind of statistics. And even the 70%, when I tell that to groups of men, they think that the other 30% are lying. And so this is something that's kind of prevalent, and we look at it as being somewhat normal, and I put that in air quotes. But so for you not to even hear about it for 17 years, was there anything that you noticed about Dave that you saw that made you kind of pause and say, okay, what's that? What's that about?
You know, in hindsight, there were probably little yellow flags, but he grew up in a family with alcoholism in the background, and so did I. So I grew up with codependency issues. And, but the other part of it, I would say, is a lot of times what addicts do is they have this really dark compartment that they're trying to hide. And so they make every other compartment squeaky clean. I remember my, our accountant making a comment, man, your husband is as honest as the day is long. And I was like, yeah, I would have bet the farm on his fidelity. So for me, it was very much blindside. Now, for I know a lot of women that, especially now, the younger women, they typically know that their husbands are dabbling in pornography. The culture has changed in the last 20 years. It's now very, I had a young man say that you're weird if you don't look at porn. So
I heard that too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not something that makes me really excited. but anyway, so I don't know if that answers your question. So for me,
I know exactly what you're saying. And now, because we have both sides now where people are kind of excusing it, women are even excusing it. My wife even told me before I brought it to her, because obviously coming into a second marriage, I had to come clean. And like you said, it couldn't be that 90%. I had to tell 100%. And Meg, the struggle that I had is that prior to meeting my wife that I'm currently married to now, I started dating after I took a hiatus from dating after going through that divorce. You can imagine, I had to do a lot of soul searching on how did I get to that point. And I was that squeaky clean guy too. And so my ex-wife thought, wow, where's this coming from? But when I met my second wife and I started telling all this stuff, she's an ex-cop. She says, Joe, I had no idea this stuff, it was this bad, that this was real. I'm thinking, she's a cop and she didn't know this. And so she didn't know about sexual addiction, about pornography. She just thought it was normal. And of course, her being a cop, she and the men on her police force in her department talking about stuff like that. And it wasn't that big of a deal. But yes, I shined the light on it for her and she understood it. So you have some women who are totally oblivious to it. And now we have women who are accepting it because they think it's normal. And you're right. And that's dysfunctional. And we'll get in a little bit in that, Meg. But let's go back. So when you said that he stepped outside of marriage, let me make that crystal clear that he was unfaithful to you physically. All right. Because I don't like men sugarcoating this and saying, well, we'll get that question. That's another question I'm asking about. I'm already getting ahead of myself, Meg. But you had biblical grounds to divorce Dave. What made you decide? I know you didn't want to act impetuously, just go ahead and do something without thinking about it. But what made you decide not to do it? And what did your friends think or say to you doing this time?
Well, I have to be honest. My flesh wanted to run. And the lie is that if I just end the marriage, the pain will stop. And believe me, it is such a deep and great heart wound that you have a hard time believing that you're going to get past it. And so I had, because I have a great deal of faith, I really just cried out to the Lord. And I got to be honest, in the beginning, I remember the very first time I sat down after that meeting with Dave, I remember I just, by the time I got to my quiet time, I was like, picked up my Bible, said something like, "All right, God, I'm here. I'm picking up my Bible because I'm a Christian and that's what Christians do, but I don't think there's anything in here." And the first thing I read was in Isaiah 54. Still touches me. About your maker is your bridegroom. And then it goes on to describe exactly how I felt, a wife who had married young only to be abandoned. And so that put me back, put my faith back on a firm footing. And I thought, okay, he does get where I am and I need to wait. And I pretty much thought I was going to wait for him to tell me it was time to go. But that's not what he said. He said, "I'm not asking you to do this over and over again, but I am asking you to wait." And so I waited and I thought, I'm going to focus on what God has for me, and I'm going to watch and see if my husband's sincere about getting help. And to be honest, I was poised and ready to run. I was waiting for the next shoe to drop, and then I would have God's okay. And so what happened was 10 months later, which is not that long, I felt God saying, it was our 20th anniversary, and I felt God saying, "I know." He said, "I want you to recommit, knowing everything you know." And so I had to wrestle with that. Like, "Lord, I'm not feeling the vows anymore. I'm not feeling it. And what do you want me to say?" And then I finally just got to the point where I realized I would trust God in my husband. And so I committed to, as long as I saw God at work in my husband, that I would commit to that relationship.
Wow. Man, I don't even know where to begin or where to start. I like taking notes when I'm talking to guests, and my mind just races to different questions. And I know this is one of those episodes that I won't get to ask all of my questions, because being that man, being in Dave's shoes, and now being the men who having to deal with this, I know the questions that they would have and the questions that they would ask, but I can't possibly ask all of them. But I will say this before I can jump into more questions. I can see traces of grace throughout your life. I mean, in this season of your marriage with Dave, and I don't know even if the listener who's listening to this can get it, but you, Meg, I know you will. It's the fact that, no one wishes what happened to you on their worst enemy. I wouldn't wish that on any woman, but it's amazing the timing of, because I know from trying to save a marriage and couldn't keep the, keep it from falling apart and trying to make it work, but you had, that you guys moved to a place where they had support and they had groups. Like you said, I was in a group for 7 years, and you're talking about they're all over the place now, but you're talking about that many years ago? No, it wasn't that many that were available. And so it happens to be in a place where you guys are, so Dave can get connected and get plugged in. And that's grace. Then that there's a support group for women, which, again, that's even less for women who are going through this stuff. You know, they have Al-Anon for, women of, who have, are husbands of alcoholics, but very few for women who've gone through, for watching their husband go through sexual addiction and pornography. And so them having that set up for you, that's, I see God's hand on that as well. But I got to tell you what really jumps out at me, not only that, is the fact that Dave reached out when he was out of town. I'm telling you now, Meg, I'm telling you from a guy point of view. All right. That rarely happens. Okay. That is rarely happens. God had a hold of something happened to Dave, made him do that.
Well, what? I'll tell you exactly what happened. We've had this conversation. He had a wife who believed his first confession and was praising God.
Oh,
for
wow.
His work. Yeah. And was praying for him. He had a wife praying for him. So the spiritual realm was ratcheting up, because God's got, on one hand, the prayers of this woman thanking him for her husband, and then this man who's still being, who's still lying. And so what happened was, when he was with a prostitute, just to clear. He shares that publicly, so I'm not sharing anything that he wouldn't say himself, because that's important to me. But so when that happened and that person left, he remembers that he felt as if he felt a depth of loneliness. He felt like God left. He said, "You think you're lonely, mister? I'm going to show you what lonely is." And God left. And we found a scripture later in Isaiah about God turning away for a time in wrath. And I think that God's anger was just seething at this man because his daughter's over here praying for him. And so that's the power that we have. That's why that scripture, that last piece, the prayer, is so, so powerful. And then when he really felt like God told him that he was going to die, that if he didn't tell me everything that he would, it would be death. And so that's what happened.
And Meg, I'm so glad that you shared that. Thank you for sharing it. What a blessing. Because again, I'm only looking at it from the man's point of view, but you gave me a great perspective on that. We have you warned in the spirit. If women, you know, they have power, even though they feel powerless, that you're warned in the spirit and God is hearing your prayers and is at the same time working on him and is stirring him up. And yeah, it makes perfect sense now that he would reach out to somebody, because I've been there. I know exactly what the torment that he was going through with that. And so to me, that is grace. And then I see another trace of grace for the fact, and wow, man, Lord, I tell you, Meg, that is somebody dropping a sledgehammer on you. Okay. One of those anvils that you see in the cartoons on road. Remember Roadrunner? They dropped the anvil on the coyote. But you had already built in support. Most women don't even have that. They don't know who they can turn to. And even though you still wanted to throw in the towel, but I'm sure there were women around you that rallied when they knew, especially the coordinator or your facilitator of your group, that I'm assuming, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that these women rallied around you as well when this happened. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I went immediately from being a facilitator to being a participant. And I was hesitant to even go that night, and I kept hemming and hawing, and my co-facilitator just said, "Listen, I'm not going to pick up my phone again. I'm going to come and get you. You need to tell the women what happened." And then immediately I had 10 women surrounding me.
Are you kidding me? Wow. Yeah. See, yeah. And Meg, it's tough. That's probably one of the toughest things you ever had to do in your life. But at the same time, can't you see God's hand on that?
Oh, yeah.
I wish my ex-wife had that kind of support at the time when I devastated her let me take that back. Dave, I truly admire and respect Dave, even though we're not condoning what Dave did. I had to be found out. I was so hard-hearted that I didn't have enough courage to confess it. And so, but of course, after it came to light, of course, I'm trying to save the marriage. I'm telling everything now, you know, but at the same time, I didn't step up, and God was convicting me in my heart, but I didn't go with that. And Meg, I tell you, there's a lot of other questions that I have for you, and you haven't scratched the surface yet, but already I feel like you're blessed someone out there who are listening. You said in your book that sexual addiction isn't about sex, but rather about escaping and avoiding pain. And I agree with you on that, even though I'm scared to say that around women. Could you tell me how you were able to come to that conclusion as a woman, and how men can help their wives to see that, to understand and stand us a little bit better, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And believe me, the first time I heard it, I think I said,
"That's exactly."
Yeah, it's like, take an aspirin.
Right.
So, I mean, to be real, but I heard enough other men, because we in the group I was in, they had a men's panel come in, and we now do that with our groups. I have actually a video with Dave and another man sharing their story, but that did a lot of things. It showed me what it looks like for a man to be truly repentant, to be taking responsibility for his actions. But when you see that, and then they tell you over and over that this is about medicating pain, that this is not about you, it at some point you have to believe it's true, because these are men that are not, they don't know each other. They're all, you know what I mean? And you hear it, but it takes a few times, because the enemy will tell women that this is about you. You're not pretty enough. You're not thin enough. You're not sweet enough. You're not good enough, whatever it is. And so that's probably the biggest lie that we have to tackle with the women. And I remember the final piece was when a man said that this is insanity. That was freedom for me, because we're trying to understand. We're trying to find some reason, some logic for this to happen. And that's what gets us tripped up as wives. There is no logic. This would have happened had he married anyone. It has zero to do with you. Right. But it's hard to get to that place as a wife.
People always ask me, since I'm so open about this, they said, Joe, what is your biggest regret? And now my ex-wife was my best friend. We, you know, talking about a 20 something year friendship. And of course, I tell you, there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't regret hurting her. But and I'm hoping, and that's why I'm glad we're talking to men. And Meg, you can feel me on this. This backs up what you just said. My biggest regret is not what I actually did to her. What's more of a regret is that I allowed to make her excuse her to use her as an excuse for what I did. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And because she wasn't the greatest wife in the world, and I wasn't the greatest husband, but she didn't do to me what I did to her. And so what I regret is that I can't believe that I tried to make excuses to justify my sinful behavior. And so you're absolutely right. And I'm hoping men don't misunderstand it. No, it doesn't matter what she's done to you. You're still going to be held accountable to God on how you love her, the way Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And that's why I failed miserably. And so, Meg, I'm just so happy to know that a woman is out there talking about this, so women can have an advocate who can kind of educate them and let them know more about this. Now, as a recovering addict myself, Meg, I know that men battle with the shame and guilt of their actions. But I'm now hearing from other women who are survivors of betrayal like you that they experience guilt and shame as well. Can you describe what that guilt and shame is like? Because I know for a lot of men, they may not understand that, because we're feeling that we did it. We feel guilty and shame. But we also, I see that in women too. Can you explain what that's like?
Oh, gosh. I think that in any whenever there's an abuser, and then, and I don't like the word victim, but an abusee, it is amazing to me that the person who was damaged takes on the shame of the abuser. Yeah. That's true with child addiction, child pornography. That's true with abuse. That's true. It's an amazing thing, because what happens is the damage goes to a deep and core place for us as women. It damages our identity. And it's hard for a man to understand that being wounded in our sexuality is so deeply personal. I mean, even physically, it's internal for a woman. It is not external. So, and when you look at even around the physiology of sex and STDs, the woman is the one who is gets the most damage. It's just fascinating to me. But anyway, so there's the shame because you feel like it's your fault. But then there's also, there's this innate, we love our husbands. We love our husbands. That's, you know, children whose parents abuse them, they love their parents. There is a complicated, there's a complicated heart connection that's been made here. And so there's a part of us that, you know, we had so many conversations around before the book was written. Obviously, I didn't want to wound my husband. I didn't want to out him. And so there's that protective element as well. And so it keeps us isolated. We don't want to tell people because we think they're going to A, judge us, or B, judge our husbands. So I think there's just so much shame around our sexuality that the enemy just has a field day.
You know, and Meg, you know, you put it in that context, it brings back memories as well. And I guess I can relate, and I think I can help men even relate even better, because you mentioned about the different contexts about even with child abuse. And I was a victim of sexual abuse from a male in our family. And you're absolutely right. I walked around for years, which kind of, in a sense, kind of also ushered me into pornography and abuse and that kind of thing. Because, you know, they say hurting people hurt other people. But I was walking around in shame and guilt. And when I told my son and confessed to my son about my abuse, the first question my son asked me, he says, "Dad, why didn't you tell anybody?" And I told him, I said, because I felt guilty. I felt like it was my fault. I said, I was ashamed. I said, then, like you said, questioning your identity. I started questioning my identity as a man, my masculinity, because I felt like he took it from me, you know. And I never thought about that from a standpoint of a woman's point of view, because men, sometimes we're disconnected emotionally and say, how can she feel that way? I'm the one. Now, if they look at it from that standpoint, abuse is abuse. And it's typically, like you said, the person who is the, quote, victim of abuse tends to take on that personally. And I'm hoping that by you sharing that perspective, that we may get at least have more empathy for what we're doing to women when that happens. Now, Meg, it's been 17 years since your husband's secret came out. Tell me what that journey has been like. I'm talking about the good and the bad days. And because even you got a little bit emotional when you were talking about it in reference to the scriptures. And how do you battle with the recurring thoughts, visions, and even sometimes anger that comes up when you think about it?
Well, I've seen so much fruit. And so, you know, I get to see on a daily basis through my ministry, women who are totally in that devastated place, and to be able to offer them some glimmers of hope and some truth and some tools. It's the way to take what was intended for evil and use it for good. And so, and it's built in accountability. It's built in accountability. Mm-hmm. I mean, people know who my husband is now. So.
Yeah.
And so people are watching as well. And so we feel the weight of that. And, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, you know, and Meg, you have me thinking again that maybe, because people are, I just spoke at a men's conference not too long ago, and a men's retreat, and they're always shocked and surprised on how transparent that I am about this, and that I'm doing it on a podcast, and I'm writing about it in articles and all this other stuff. And I confess to these men that it's not that it's easy, but I get stronger every time I confess. Every time I say, I don't use it to beat myself up over it, but in a sense, it's to glorify God in it, because I get stronger. And also, because like what you're doing, Meg, it offers hope to other people in similar situations. Because, hey, if he can do it, maybe God can do that for me as well. I tell men that I'm not, you know, I don't even condone, quote, second marriages. I say I love my wife dearly. But I said my first marriage was God's best for me. But my second marriage was God's grace towards me, which I didn't deserve. And so, in a sense, yeah, I can understand, even because the enemy is always trying to attack me. Like I tell you, there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't think about it. But I don't condemn myself over it. It's just like it's there. But then I look at, like you said, the fruit that comes out of it. And God can use anything for good. Now, Meg, in your book, you discuss about four fictitional women and how each goes through the healing process after betrayal. Could you briefly describe what each of those struggles are like for those particular women? Because I know you did it for a reason, to give women a different perspective. Could you briefly kind of describe those four different women for us?
Oh, yeah. There's, well, basically there's Dee Dee, and she's kind of my ethnic voice. She finds out when a woman shows up at her doorstep with a baby that's her husband's. And so basically each chapter is a topic. So the first one is disclosure or discovery. So the different women find out in different ways about what the husband are doing. Then the next chapter is kind of shrouded. How do they do when basically everything is dark and confusing? And there's different way. One of the gals responds in anger, and then another one of the women is very much rose-colored glasses. So she's more like how I was. We just put a high gloss finish on everything. We just put a Christian sticker on top and keep going. And yeah, and then and I'm blanking on the last gal, but each each of the four women shows four different ways of dealing with each of the steps along the journey. And so the women who read the book will find themselves in one of those women in each chapter. And that was kind of the goal of using those characters.
You know, now, Meg, you know, I tell you, I take notes when I'm interviewing guests. And this is a little bit a side question based on the direction I wanted to go with the questions. But I'm just curious now as a researcher, as an ex-professor, I'm just curious because you do these healing groups for women and you now obviously talk to a lot of women. You get to speak to a lot of women. And I noticed something when I was going through recovery. That because I went for a long extended period of time, 7 years, not because I had to go, because I wanted to go. And I wanted to also offer hope to other men. That's why I continued to go. And now I have my own groups now that I run. But I noticed something that really alarmed me. And because you mentioned Dee Dee, and this is what made me want to ask you this question, is that I could count on one hand how many men of color I saw in these recovery groups. And I'm talking about over a 7 year period. You can imagine how many men I saw. It had to be at least 500. And because a lot of them never come back or they only come back for a season and that kind of thing. But I can count on one hand how many men of color. And so when you did this Dee Dee character, have you learned anything about why that's the case among ethnic groups? Because I'm hearing it's the same thing in the Latino community as well as the African-American community of men of color are not going to these recovery groups and they're not getting going public about this. What have you found on that?
Well, basically, I had a group that was primarily women of color and they taught me a lot. And
I wish I could have gone.
They taught me a lot. So, and and they are the ones that helped me write Dee Dee because obviously I'm not a woman of color. So I didn't feel like I had the ability to do that. So they helped me with that, which I'm so thankful. And basically they said it, there's an atmosphere, there's kind of a macho atmosphere, attitude in both African American and Hispanic cultures. And then there is because of that, the women can be subservient or they're just so glad to have a husband. I think in some instances that they don't want to mess with it. And so I think that's part of what's going on. It's a culture. There's a culture of acceptance, more of a culture of acceptance in those communities. That's, as we said, that's expanding outward. So,
but I wish, Meg, that talking about a secret desire is that I can get more men of color to come forward to talk about this because I'll talk to them individually about it, but I can't get them in a group to talk about it. You know, and that concerns me because we know that this type of sin hides and thrives in secrecy. You know, an enemy likes to use that to attack us with it. But Meg, let me get back to the regular questions I wanted to ask you. I was just curious about that. But many men, after coming clean, and this present company included, they want to move on with life and put their sins and the pain that they've caused behind them. And they often get frustrated and impatient. And you mentioned that earlier when we talked, when you first came on the show, when they don't see their wives, when they see their wives continue to struggle. And they say, why can't she just get past this? And what advice, and now in hindsight, I see this very insensitive, but what advice would you give to them from a woman's perspective when they're feeling that way towards their wives?
Well, it's funny. I've done some men's panels where that question always comes up. When is my wife going to get over it?
Yeah, when's she going to get over this? Yeah.
Yeah. So I usually ask them, how many years did you lie to her? And that sort of...
Ouch.
Just,
yeah, oh,
it actually just God. Kind of makes me a little bit of an ouch. But it's that...
Meg, you ain't right. That is...
good. I'm going to be real.
I love it. I'm going to use that. That is good. Keep going. I'm sorry. Go ahead. That got me.
That's all right. But the other thing is part of the men's healing as well is for them to be able to sit in the pain and the consequences of what has happened because that is... that they caused it. So they need to be able to sit in that and and listen. It takes time for a man. Like, I think you mentioned that you're so disconnected from your feelings. We call it a thawing out period. We tell wives, because the wives are also waiting for when is my husband going to be empathetic? When is he going to is he going to really understand? And I'll never forget when the first time my husband came into the men's panel, and we do it for 2 hours. It's no joke. These women can ask any questions they want for 2 hours.
Brave man.
And the first time he did that, he was visibly shaken when we were driving home, and he looked at me and he said, I'm not sure. I fully saw your pain. And so he saw it in the faces of those other women. So it takes time for her to recover, and it's part of his own journey is to be able to sit in that pain and be able to be empathetic, to be able to feel what she's feeling.
You know, Meg, I tell you, you've offered so much, but I got to tell you that just this segment right here was worth the whole show of you saying this, because so many men complained to me about this. And I was one of those people who was saying, when is she going to get over this? And so what you just shared was worth hearing. And I tell you, having launched this show, we had a guy on who he had wrote a book called The Porn Antidote, named Carl Stewart. And he's a good friend of mine now. And he had wrote an article for Covenant Eyes. And when I read that article, I just burst into tears. He wrote it. I'm thinking he's not a woman, but he wrote exactly how my wife sounded, my ex-wife sounded. And I'm thinking, so that's what she's feeling. And he used an analogy once about how he said, imagine as a man, you throw a stick of dynamite and you blow up something. He says, well, you're looking to see if anybody died. He says, but you don't understand that the scrap metal hit a lot of different people. And he says, we don't look at the collateral damage. But the thing that you just said, I think was worth this entire show. So I'm going to repeat it so our men can hear it. One, I love that. How many years did you lie to her? That is classic. I don't know where you got that from, Meg, but that is good. But that, because that right there, you can stop, right? That's a drop the mic kind of moment. But because you're right, because we've been lying for years. But when you said sit in the pain of the consequences, because we're uncomfortable and it's uncomfortable seeing you hurt. It's uncomfortable knowing that what is she thinking right now about me? It's uncomfortable for us to say, man, I bet she's never going to trust me again. Why is she looking, why won't she trust me again ever? You know, why is she looking at me funny? Or why, I bet she think I'm looking at that woman that we just passed by. And we don't want to sit in that uncomfortable state, not realizing that we've put you in a state of uncomfort, which goes to the last thing you just said. You guys are waiting to see how long would it take for us to get it, to understand. And I remember when after my divorce, I tell you, I mean, I walked around in so much shame even after the divorce, and I couldn't even look my ex-wife in the face when I go pick up my son. And one day I wrote something for her, and I call it a forgiveness letter for men. And I probably should have, maybe we should add it to, we should add it to the show in the show notes. But I read that letter to her of the pain and damage that it caused her. And by the time I was done, I asked her, I said, I know you said I don't understand, but does that get close? She says, I think you're starting to get it now. And maybe I'll email that to you, Meg, because it's something because every time I share with men, they said, I wish I could say that to her that way, because it takes full responsibility of what we've done. And also expressing her emotions that she was hoping that we understand and that we feel. But Meg, this session right here was just a blessing to me. And I still got some other questions for you. But what do you think are some of the worst things a man could do in trying to help his wife heal after sexual betrayal? And what the responsibility, if any, does the wife have in helping her husband recover, if that makes sense?
Oh, yeah. I get that question a lot. And there's good news and bad news.
Okay.
bad news is you can't help each other. You've been in the same near-death car crash, and the husband has been life-flighted to deal with his his brain injuries, and the wife has gone to another facility for her internal damage, internal bleeding. You can't help each other. The best thing that you can do is your own healing work. And I get that all the time, and I know, and I'm guessing that there's a man who's listening to this saying, I wish my wife would sound like me, or wish she would respond like me. And I would say, I am here because of the work my husband did. I am here because he is behind the ministry, because he stood up and he battled. I watched him for years allow God to do open heart surgery, and he's still in the process, and he stays in the process, and he is one of the bravest men I know. He couldn't help me, but the best thing he did to help me was helping himself.
Amen, Meg. I tell you, and man, I'm hoping that if you're in your car, if you're doing a lawn or whatever, listen to the wisdom behind Meg's words. And I'm seconding that as a person who's gone through this process. The best thing we can do for our wives is get the help that we need to become a better husband. To understand how we got to that point that we chose porn or other women and all the sex as medication to medicate the pain. And Meg, the fact that you even can call your husband brave, it just blesses my heart, because it tells me God is doing a real healing in your heart to help you see him the way he does, not just the way you feel. And a lot of times we don't see our wives the way God sees them. We see them the way we feel, and we get impatient with her. And we think, wow, like you said, I wish my wife sounded like Meg. But I'm glad that you mentioned that it's because of the work that you see in your husband has committed himself to. And he's behind you and supporting you in doing this and being transparent and honest about obviously something that's very embarrassing and shameful to him. But I'm glad that you shared it. That is awesome. Now, I want you to tell us a little bit about Healing Hearts and how you launched that group and how others can get started, maybe get one started in their group. Because we said there's not always in every place that women have this kind of support. How'd you launch that group, and what can we do to help?
Well, it started at our church, was the first Healing Hearts group. And I did that for, gosh, I don't know, 7-10 years. And then I took a bit of a break, thought, okay, Lord, am I done? The book had been out a few years. And then, you know, God has a sense of humor. And I was actually visiting the site where our office is. A friend had an office here, and she was telling me about this facility where it's owned by a Christian man. The downstairs is US Digital. It's a motion sensor company. And mm-hmm. as that succeeds, then the upstairs grows. We have over 40 ministries that he donates office space to us gratis. Oh, it's an amazing gift. Christian businessman. It's an amazing model. So I thought, does she think I'm going to start a nonprofit? And, and you know, and then I walked by the room. We have a training center, and I was just like a light bulb went off, and I thought, oh my gosh, we need to be meeting here. We need to get out of one particular church, and we need to be in a neutral setting where women aren't going to run into their friends or their pastor. And so that was the idea. Then, of course, I had my Moses moment. Like, I don't know anything about running a nonprofit. And then God just literally laid out runway lights. My sister talked to me about getting a board, and it just seemed like things just fell into place. That's a whole another book about how God just moved all the pieces into place. And we now have three offices here in the US Digital building. And yeah, God has just poured out his favor upon beginning to raise awareness. So I think the thing we really need, as all nonprofits do, we're looking for passionate sustainers. We're looking for people that, you know, for $20 a month or whatever, believe in helping a woman go from hope to healing. And, you know, my husband is really one of our biggest supporters and in so many ways. So I work here for free. It's all, it's just a gift. It's a way of giving back some of what God has done for us. And yeah.
Wow, I tell you, Meg, seeing God just turn her ashes into beauty, and man, talking about all things work together for good. What a blessing to see how God can redeem and restore. I tell you, this is powerful. You know, I've mentioned before we came on the show that I said I wanted to ask you some man up questions, and I think I'm gonna have time, even though I didn't get to every question. I think you covered some of the most important things I wanted men out there listening today to gather from this interview. But I do want to ask you the man up questions. And Meg, this is the part of our show that men look forward to, that we're known for. And it, we ask five questions starting with letters M-A-N-U-P. And the M stands for mistake. The A stands for attitude. The N stands for next. And the U stands for understanding. The P stands for problem. And I'll explain that in a second. But the question is, are you ready, Meg?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right. And we'll get started by asking Meg the man up questions right after this short break. Hey, Mighty Warrior. You know, the great John Wesley once said that if you give him 300 men who fear nothing but God, hate nothing but sin, and are determined to know nothing but Jesus Christ crucified, he said he would set the world on fire. Do you know that one quote changed my life? Because after hearing it, God immediately gave me a vision to build a team of 300 men who would change the world for Christ. But I didn't realize it at the time, that a man is the hardest thing to reach. And if you don't believe me, just ask any pastor or men's ministry leader or even a wife. Now, due to the success of our Real Men Connect podcast, we've managed to reach and teach men all over the world in 43 countries and still counting. But John Wesley knew when he spoke those famous words, just like Jesus did, that there's a huge difference between attracting a passive crowd of men and recruiting a committed team of men. So we decided to launch the Real Men 300. The Real Men 300 is an opportunity for you to join an exclusive team of men who've agreed to financially partner with Real Men Connect to be personally mentored, supported, and coached so they can be professionally trained and equipped to mentor, support, and disciple the next generation of men for Christ. So we want to personally help you grow in Christ while you're supporting us in ministry. We're a nonprofit organization and we rely heavily on your financial support. So we're asking you to consider partnering with us by giving at least $30 a month. That's only a dollar a day to help us help you be the man God called and created you to be. To give or to find out more, just go to realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com and join the 300 today. Welcome back, Mighty Men of God. I'm here with my guest, Meg Wilson, who's the author of Hope After Betrayal and also the founder of a ministry under the same name, Hope After Betrayal Ministries. And Meg has been such a wonderful guest on the show, but now I'm going to hit her with the man up questions. So we don't spare punches just because you're a woman, Meg. So we're coming right at you. And I tell you, the letter starts with, the letters M-A-N-U-P. And Meg, the first letter stands for mistake. And I want to know, what mistake did you learn the most from doing this process of healing from betrayal?
I think in the beginning, the biggest mistake was trying to manage my husband's healing journey, trying to put too much pressure on him, or just having, there were cords of identity and self-worth and security that were attached to my husband, that every single one of those had to be disconnected and attached to Christ where they belonged.
So when you said, because I want to dig a little bit deeper in that, even though we don't usually ask follow-up questions to the man-up questions, but when you said manage, is what did that look like, trying to manage this healing journey? Because we do have women out here who might be listening to this, and what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it can look like we're a detective, always trying to follow up, look at his phone, read his emails, or I'll make an appointment for you to go to the counselor. I'll try to find a group for you, or anything that's not my job to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, the AMEG stands for attitude. If you could change one attitude in women, other than, because I could see a lot of women doing the managing, you know, the healing journey. If there was an attitude in women you could change about this, what would it be?
Oh, I wish I could change the attitude that paralyzes wives, and that is that somehow that it's their fault.
That is their fault, right?
It's their fault. They're just, or it's tied to something in their past that God allowed it because of something they did. Anything that ties
Yeah, anything that gets that they attach their, you know, their value and self-worth to and blaming themselves. Now, we typically don't do this, and this could be a first time, Meg. I'm asking you two questions to the man. Of course, with the A, what attitude in men would you change in reference to this process? You know, we just said for the women, but what about for the men? What attitude in their hearts would you change?
I would change the attitude that men have about being a lone ranger, about thinking they're the only one, about thinking they can do it by themselves, about everything that keeps them from the help they need. It keeps them from being transparent. It keeps them from growth.
You know, Meg, it's funny you say that. You sound like a guy in men's ministry. That's exactly how we feel. We want that to change that in the heart of men. And I even tell men, I say, even Lone Ranger had Tonto. You know, yeah. He was by himself. You know, but yeah, that's a pet peeve for us in men's ministry as well, because we see men trying to do it alone, and it breaks our hearts because they don't have to. There's so much support and help out there. Now, Meg, the N stands for next. We mentioned about your groups that you've had, the blessing that God has showed you on that and getting that started and giving you provision for that. You got your book and you launched the ministry. But what would be the next big thing you would do for God if you knew you couldn't fail the ministry, knowing what you know now?
Gosh, my heart is just to get the church talking about health and sexuality. I would like to get all the most powerful Christian influencers in a room and say, people, let's wake up. This is the cancer that's eating the heart of the church, and we're not talking about it.
Now, Meg, I got to tell you, if you're able to figure that out, I'm on board with you. I'll partner with you on that because it makes no sense. How can 70% of the men admit that they struggle with it and over half the pastors, and we don't even talk about it?
Well, you just answered the question. Because they're struggling on their own. So yeah, they can't talk about it.
Yeah. Boy, but I'm serious, though. If you ever figure out a way to do that, I'm on board. So just let me know. Now, the U stands for understand. Now, hindsight is 2020, and we look backwards now. What do you understand better now about this process of healing for women and getting hope after betrayal that you didn't understand back then?
Oh, I feel like I have a bigger picture. 17, however many years later, I lose track of time. All these years later, you talked about the collateral damage. Well, there's another side. There's collateral blessing. There are ripple effects that I wish I could paint a picture for the men that are wondering if this is really worth the risk of coming out and talking about, because not doing it, there's collateral damage that goes on. But by doing this, there is, I call it, it's legacy. My youngest daughter just got married a week or so ago. And there was a man there that my husband had been mentoring with, and he wrote the sweetest letter. And he has a little daughter who's probably 6 or 7. So he's there with his daughter, watching my husband with the father-daughter dance. And this wedding was just, well, I'm sure all moms feel that way, but it was just a celebration of God. And I mean, he sent rainbows and deer. It was pretty cool. But just the letter that he wrote about to my husband about that dance, that day, that wedding, that relationship with his daughter is the legacy, is the blessing of the work that he has done. And so that it not only has it blessed me and my children, it's going on to bless now this young man and everybody who is there that knows our story.
Well, Meg, I tell you, I think you're going to sue me for plagiarism, because there's so many things you've said today that I'm going to liberate and share, because I've never heard collateral blessings, but I'm going to use that phrase, man. That is so good. That is so good. And Meg, I'm going to let you out of here. We got one last question for you, and that's the P. And right now, you're obviously in a great place right now. And I mean, you could hear it in your voice, just the way you even view your husband. You mentioned something earlier in the podcast that I didn't go back to, but I think it's a great time to use it now. You said that when you were decided not to divorce Dave, that you were going to trust the God in Dave. And I tell that to a lot of women, but I don't think they fully grasp that. But it seems like you really, that was your hope, was in God, in him, not in the man himself. But I want to know, in as great of a place you're in right now. The P stands for problem. What do you still struggle with as a woman today, even though you've received a lot of healing for it?
Well, I think I struggle with the culture that we live in. I have a almost 4-year-old grandson. I worry about the world that he's inheriting. I still struggle with, I think, self-image. It's sort of a moving target. You feel like, okay, I'm good with where I am, but then now we've got aging issues. That brings up more things, like everything's so youth oriented, so it begins to stir those self doubts. So I just have to use the tools that I have, you know, just to remind myself that I am fearfully and wonderfully made, and that my relationship with my husband is not built on anything temporal or physical. It's something much deeper. So I think that there will always be scar tissue, to be clear. But my husband says it well. He's, you know, the scripture says a long litany of things, and he says, that's what I once was. And so that's what my husband would say. That's who I once was. So I would just put that challenge out to all the men. Make that who you once were, and be who God created you to be tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, one of the knocks, I love recovery groups. I tell you, I was part of one for a long time. But one thing I don't like about recovery groups is how they have you identify yourself. They have you identify yourself with your behavior. Now, I understand the purpose behind it is to get you to accept responsibility for your behavior, which we all should do. But I prefer to call myself what God calls me, you know, not what my choices are. You know, men are not what they do. They're who God says they are. And like you said, make that be a part of something you did, not who you are. And you said something that I think is a great place to close this interview, is how you still struggle with sometimes with identity issues, because media is just bombarding. I don't see how women can do it, man. I mean, they're bombarding you with everything that you're not. And what I would say to men is, please, please, please. And I've learned this. And now it's funny because my wife, she runs a fitness business. And so women think that she works out and keeps in shape and everything. They say, well, I'm sure your husband appreciates that, which I do. But they said, no, you don't understand. I can be big as a house. My husband won't even act like he won't even notice. He won't say anything about it. Now, I'm saying this publicly on the air for everybody to hear that, no, I would notice. But I want my wife to understand that I love her not based on how she looks, but who she is. So for the men out there, please, you know, this addiction and sexual addiction, it goes so far beyond just the infraction itself, but it goes to the core, the identity of a woman. And you do not want to shatter her identity. Now, we know that you find your identity in Christ, but we don't want to be that stumbling block that gets in your way. And so I'm glad that you have such a great husband in Dave now who's supporting you, but you're even admitting to us that even though you have a husband now who's in supporting you, you still, as a woman, still struggle with that. And so we don't want to be contributors to that quote collateral damage. So Meg, thank you for being so honest. I mean, you did a great job with the man up question. You survived. Yeah, thank you for being so honest and vulnerable and open with our men. You fit right on the show, Meg. You can be on our show anytime.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
And men, we've come to the end of our show, but don't you worry. We'll be back to do it again next week with a new guest, with new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. And I'd like to thank my guest, Meg Wilson, for joining us today and being so gracious with her time. Meg, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And Meg, quickly for our guests who are listening, if they wanted to find out more about you and your ministry and what you're doing and the great work that you're doing, how can they reach out to you? How can they connect with you?
Yep, just hopeafterbetrayal.com. And I do have a few resources for men on there in the resource section, some online resources. And yeah, there's information. If their wife is looking for a group, we have online groups. So...
All right. And so, and Meg, what we'll do is we'll include that in the show notes as well. That's hopeafterbetrayal.com. And Meg says she has some resources there just for you guys if you need help with this. And Meg, they can also reach out to you via email as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. And guys, if you like today's show, please do us a favor. And this is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us. Let us know what you thought of Meg's interview. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. Guys, you have made us number one for a reason. It's because you're getting some benefit from this show. So please don't keep the blessing to yourself. Share with other brothers. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible, terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, you know, stay in God's grip. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out RealMenConnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's RealMenConnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.